Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, September 16th, 2014. With me today, I have the always jovial John Martellaro. How are you, John?
Jovial, yes. I've had my walk this morning. I'm in a great mood.
Awesome. And my own personal concert, Brian Chaffin.
It's great to be here on the KTMO Morning Show. Good to be with you, Jeff.
Man, it's swell. It's like I really have my own radio show. I'm somebody.
Yes, you are somebody.
Yeah. Hey, as long as we're here, I have some stuff we can talk about. And I thought we could start off with something that goes against what I've been thinking, but totally plays into what you've been thinking, Brian.
And, yay!
Yeah. And this is the notion that Apple Pay is going to be a successful platform for Apple for mobile payments. And Apple Pay will let you use the NFC chip that's part of the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus, and then eventually the Apple Watch, to make credit card payments at participating retailers.
Stand by here a second. I have this commercial break. Jeff is wrong.
All right. So the reason that I have been skeptical about the success of Apple Pay is that there has been so much resistance to mobile pay systems in the United States. Now, that said, today there's news that has come out that banks are now ready to start like really seriously fighting each other to gain the spot as the default credit card on our iPhones for Apple Pay.
And I think that's a great sign. I think it's an encouraging sign.
And the service hasn't even been launched yet.
Right. The service doesn't even launch until October, and banks are already ramping up their promotions and their advertising to convince people they have the credit card that you want to use with Apple Pay. And so I see this, and I'm like, all right, well, that doesn't fit with my belief that Apple Pay is going to have a very long road to hoe. And so if the banks are getting behind this in the way that it appears that they are, then that signals to me that there's probably some serious momentum here.
Well, let's go back to iTunes. When Apple launched iTunes, Apple did so with Disney and Capitol, right? Was it just in the Disney on Capitol Records? Like they didn't launch with all of the record labels,
right? Yeah, they had a very small subset of music,
and then of course the rest of the record labels quickly came on board. When Apple launched music and video, when Apple launched videos and movies, TV shows in the iTunes store, Apple did so with a subset of the studios.
Correct.
Yet when Apple announces Apple Pay, Apple has 83% of U.S. banks on board more than a month out before its release.
And that is significant.
It is very, very significant that Apple was able to get all of these banks on board. You know, if we'd been following in prior patterns, Apple would have had like Citibank and Chase, or you know, Citibank and
Bank of America or Wells Fargo, whatever.
Yeah, right. Like just one or two of the largest banks, and then would be relying on the success to browbeat the others into coming on board too. But instead, we get 83% of U.S. banks on board at the time of the announcement. It'll probably be more by the time it launches. And the banking industry is clearly delighted with Apple Pay. I mean, that's.
I think I can explain part of it.
Please do.
I've been doing a little bit of reading about the EMV initiative. That's an initiative from Europay, MasterCard, and Visa. Starting in October 2015, there's a liability shift. And what that means is that if merchants have implemented the smart card reader technology, then the issuing banks still maintain responsibility for fraud. However, if they do not, the merchants with the least technology, if they continue to use the magnetic strip technology, now, starting in October 2015, bear the burden of fraud. So if we have another Target incident where they only accept magnetic cards and there's some sort of snafu or there's mass stolen cards or something happens, Target pays the bill, not MasterCard or Visa or whoever is involved. The other thing is that, and what that's going to do is that's going to drive the merchants towards better technology. And the second part of it is that, according to what I've read just recently, there's 1.1 billion credit cards out there outstanding with magnetic strips, and it's going to cost the banks $1.4 billion to replace these credit cards. And these smart cards with the chips in there work a lot like Apple Pay. There's an authentication token that goes to the device. The token is authenticated. If it's authenticated as a legitimate card, then there's an encrypted transaction that goes to the bank. The bank decrypts it, says, okay, everything's cool. The merchant is credited and the customer is debited. That works a lot like Apple Pay with the token and the encrypted data. So I'm guessing that the credit card companies are enthusiastic about having an electronic credit card on file and not having to spend the better part of $1 billion reissuing these smart cards. They will en masse a lot of people who don't have this capability, but Apple Pay kind of relieves them of having to replace these cards in many cases. And I think that's leading toward the enthusiasm Jeff talked about at the top of the show.
Could be.
I think the fact that that banks get a higher percentage from these type of payments is having some impact on their enthusiasm. And I think, though, that this is where we start to run into the resistance problem, which I don't think is as serious an issue as I thought last week. And it's getting the retailers to get on board, because they can swap out all the machines, they can have the chip and sign systems in place, and they can have all of that. But there's nothing that says that they have to enable the NFC feature on these new card readers that they're getting. And my fear still is that many retailers won't want to deal with the added expense that they incur by having NFC payment support enabled. And I think that resistance is going to be a difficult hurdle for banks to overcome.
Well, Jeff, why do you think they would accept the smart card transaction where you insert the card, but they wouldn't accept the Apple Pay or NFC?
Well, because the fees that they pay will be different. They will be higher. And they have historically had bad luck, or at least they perceive that they have had bad luck with NFC systems. And Best Buy, as an example, they enabled NFC payments several years ago and then killed the whole thing in 2011. They're like, nope, this costs too much money, and it doesn't work.
Well, that's the thing. It didn't work. Apple's thing is likely to work.
Apple's thing is likely to work, and are retailers going to be okay paying the extra money?
We don't know that it's going to be extra money yet.
We don't know that it's going to be extra money.
Are you talking about the 15 cents on $100 that Apple's taking off this, which is pretty small?
No, that's going to eventually trickle down, and consumers will pay that because no money comes out of this for free.
It's a 0.15%. Did you say 0.15%?
I said 15 cents per $100.
Yeah, you did.
Which
okay,
I guess is 0.15%. Yeah,
right. 15 basis points.
Yeah, so if retailers perceive that they're going to be paying more than they otherwise would, then we will have some resistance. Other retailers will see this as a great opportunity to draw more customers in.
Also, faster transactions. That's going to matter for a lot of retailers because it means more customers processed, fewer people paid to clerk for them. And it's going to work.
I hope you're right, and I really do hope that I'm wrong on this one.
Well, you have an now outstanding track record.
That's true. And with
Hey, Jeff. You want to bet me back that glass of scotch? Maybe I can break even.
Sure. But we'll go ahead and do our scotch exchange anyhow, you better
give me another bar fast. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the opportunity to have a drink with you, that's worth it right there.
Let's take just a brief time out if we can to show dismay at NFC being for Apple Pay only.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for bringing that up. I am disappointed in that. I was really hoping that Apple would have the NFC chip open to third-party developers. My new hope is that we will see the same thing that happened with Touch ID. So with the iPhone 5S, it was limited to just Apple's own services. With the release of iOS 8, that gets opened up to third-party developers.
Yep.
So I'm hoping that this no NFC for other companies or other developers is a short-term thing, just as it was for Touch ID.
Yeah, if it takes locking us out of NFC to make Apple Pay secure, it's an acceptable trade-off, but I certainly was looking forward to playing with some of the location based reminders and stuff. But Apple could solve that by releasing some personal iBeacon stuff for me.
Sure, and for all we know, that's exactly what they have in store.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true. We will end up having to see it anyway. Thanks for the short divergence.
Oh, sure. Okay, so the other thing I want to look at is this whole Tim Cook, Charlie Rose interview thing. And I find this fascinating because this is the kind of interview that I can't imagine Steve Jobs really getting into. But here we have Tim Cook doing a very open and candid interview with Charlie Rose.
Yeah, Tim has done several such interviews. And of course, he's so controlled over what he says. Although I'd like to add to that in the little snippet. So yesterday, the Charlie Rose Show published three and a half minute snippet talking specifically about privacy with Tim Cook. And Tim was, to me, talking with some of the same passion that he talked about that he was addressing the issue in the shareholder meeting with the conservative advocacy group in the shareholder meeting. It seemed like there was a little bit less control with Tim than there normally is.
Yes. And I found that to be very interesting, too, because you're right. He's always so controlled. And everything he says, it just comes out so calm and so smooth. I actually enjoy listening to Tim Cook talk. I
like it when he gets he wasn't riled up like he was in the shareholder meeting, but he was – it was definitely – he was like choosing he would start to say something and then like figure out exactly how he wanted to say it and, change course throughout the conversation. And normally he is so methodical and precise and measured with what he's saying that he does even when he's being interviewed live on the stage that it always just comes off as just so precise and controlled. And when they started talking about the privacy stuff, he seemed to get pretty passionate about it.
You know what I worry about, Brian, though? Okay. I worry about the message getting percolated through the system. Charlie Rose's show is not a mass market show. It's the perfect venue for what Tim Cook is trying to say, and Charlie is the perfect interviewer for listening to Tim. But what happens is that this privacy message, this theme that Apple's using, we don't care about your personal data. We're not trying to treat you as a product. We want to sell goods and services that help people maintain their privacy. that message gets over to Charlie on a very obscure show on PBS, and then it gets digested by writers who have their own thing to say, and it ends up on websites that customers may not read. They're walking into the Apple store. How are they getting the message? How does Apple put this message? Is it their TV shows talk about whimsical, their TV ads talk about whimsical things, you know, creativity and individual, you know, personal development and so on. So I'm waiting for some TV commercials from Apple now that implement this message that Apple's been percolating for about the last year so that it can kind of bubble to the surface in the customer consciousness.
Yeah, part of Tim's message was when it comes to your personal data, you should follow the money, which is the first time I've ever heard that from him. And he went on to explain that that for companies where their business model is based on accumulating gobs of personal data about you, if that's their business model, then you know you're the product. And I've never heard. I've never heard them say that. I think it was like Peter Cohen's the first person I ever heard that particular phrase from. So it was fantastic to see all these messages being emphasized by Tim Cook in this interview. But I agree that Apple has done a very poor job of marketing this stuff. You know, Tim has several executives have referred to we protect your data and whatnot. But we don't have any real marketing on that. And it would be in that this stuff's important to me. You know, I'd like to see it pushed by Apple.
I would, too.
Yeah, you can imagine some rather snarky ads where, you know, two guys walk into a store with one with an iPhone and one with a Samsung phone. And the guy buys some baseball bat or something at a sporting goods store. And right away he starts getting ads on his phone. You know, for something or other that's related to that, you know, some sporting gear.
Bits and balls.
And the Apple guy says, yep, that never happens to me. I've got an iPhone or, you know, something like that that would kind of fight back against Samsung and get this message over to the customers.
Yeah, Google's the enemy here.
Yeah.
Google's the target. Google is the target-rich environment when it comes to privacy at the very least. But Tim Cook's comments weren't – he didn't name any companies. He didn't name any names whatsoever. But he's talking primarily about Google and Facebook. And then further on, you can kind of sort of – you know, you can go to Yahoo. You can go to Twitter. You can go to all of the various social media platforms that have made us the product. It'd be nice to see Apple pushing this.
Yeah, he's so low-key, it's hard for his message to get percolated through the system. You know, if Steve Jobs were doing that, I don't want to get into this mode of if Steve Jobs were only alive. But the contrast, you know, is that Steve Jobs would come up with these memorable one-liners, which were so succinct and so pithy.
Yeah, it's about the music, stupid.
Percolate through, yeah, or hold it different. They would percolate through the media system and end up in the minds of customers. Tim is so academic. He's like me. He's so low-key and introverted and intellectual.
Well, again, that was what was interesting about this particular video is that he got kind of passionate. I don't know. Maybe I studied Tim Cook too much. So maybe most people aren't even going to notice that.
Maybe not. But the fact that you do notice it is really cool. And then here you are sharing your observations. And remember, you're the guy that got the news out there about how Tim was riled up at the shareholder meeting.
Yeah, definitely riled up.
Great article.
Yeah. Definitely riled up.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, passions on the highway.
Also, uh-oh, we're out of time.
Yep.
Yeah. So thank you, both of you, for joining me today. And I just love the insight that both of you are bringing. And thanks. You guys rock.
Thanks for having us, man.
Thank you. See you later.